Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. Good to have you with us, gang. Harry, the producer behind the dials today, and Jay Bell in the hot seat. It is the dream team, people, and a cracking catch up with the big man. Lots of your questions we're firing at the end as well via the mailbag at the NC Show. Incidentally, if you want to get in touch with the show, that's how you do it. Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. As we've been saying for the last few weeks, we're going to try and roll out as many bonus pods as we can. So we're rolling two a week at the moment, a couple more coming your way next week, including Marek Larwood, the comedian, is going to be in the house, another special guest as well. So we'll roll those out later on, but we'll get straight down to business. Terrific chat with the fantastic Jay Bell. So Jay Bell, the last time, my friend, I saw you was right after the Super Bowl, actually right after the game. You finished your broadcast, I finished mine. We saw each other, OC, Mike, everybody was there, high off the buzz of the Super Bowl. And here we are, what, 6 weeks later, whatever it is, and the world has changed, my friend. The world,
man, we could not have ever predicted this, man. This is different times. I mean, the one thing we all are doing is reevaluating our life. So we're all doing it at the same time.
Yep.
So hopefully we come out of this a better world.
Do you think, and it's a really good point straight off the bat, and I love the way you're going, you're deep diving into the philosophy straight off the bat. I wouldn't expect anything else from you, Jay Bell. Is that one of the big positives from all of this, that we are going to come out of this with obviously a significant cost of human life and most importantly, the economic impact that is inevitably is going to affect a lot of people and their livelihoods and their well-being for a prolonged period? All that negative stuff aside, one of the positives is it has put the brakes on for so many people that it is forcing people to take stock of what's important. And in a world that we live in, which is at a breakneck pace, and it's so easy to get caught up in that slipstream, that actually this is going to be one of the few positives from coronavirus, that we will come out to the most part as better people for it.
Yeah, you know, crisis always leads to an opportunity. And I think that, you know, the narrative across our planet was people turn into nationalistic ideas, you know, forgetting that we were all humans, right? It's kind of like when you watch those shows, the only time you see the human race come together is when there's an alien attacking, right? All of a sudden there's an alien coming down and all of a sudden we're talking to everybody. We're all friends again. And this is that situation where, you know, I've always looked at myself and I've always tried to understand people from different walks of life. And I probably learned that skill in football more than anything. Mm. And so I've always appreciated different backgrounds, different perspectives. I'm open. And it just shocked me where the world was going before this pandemic. Mm. I mean, people stopped listening to each other. Mm. You know, and I just was so fearful, especially with a young child. I was like, man, this isn't good.
Yeah.
And the thing that's coming out of this is that we all need each other. And we do. What are we fooling? We're a team, right? We love talking sports, and there's a reason, because teams matter. Teams are why organization, businesses, people have success, because they have good teams. And we are, as a human race, are a team, and we need each other, and we just realize how much we do. You know, communication is the key, and you see a lack of that with a lot of leaders.
And communication, I guess, on a practical level as well, is adapting. And in our industry, we've had to adapt radically. I mean, so many different industries have, of course, with the enforced lockdown, but broadcasting quite acutely, you know, and we're going to see this with the draft, right? We're coming up, which is not just the very different visual spectacle that it will be, but also how it's going to be covered, right? From a broadcasting perspective, it's going to be wildly different. And I'm disappointed in a way, Jay Bell, because I know you were personally looking forward to Vegas. I mean, you were telling me stories.
You're my friend, so you know me. Of course I was ready for Vegas. Man, it was like going home. Stuff I did in Vegas, so I can never repeat on a I never repeat on a podcast or on television.
On a family show.
Yeah, never. That was a long time ago.
Well, hey, it is a shame we're not going to be able to do it this time around, but I'm sure they'll reboot Vegas down the line, and that's something we could look forward to. But from a broadcasting, a journalistic point of view, the draft is going to be a very different proposition, isn't it?
You know, it gives people an opportunity that are skillful and understand the draft. They get to now jump into this media landscape, right? They're not restricted by the big networks kind of dominating it. Say if you're a guy that knows ball, follows the college game, and understands the needs of the team, you're going to have a voice. So that's really cool. We're going to see some people come to the forefront we probably never heard of. Hopefully, I would like to see that. But on a team, from a team perspective, I think we're going to study this draft a long time, Nat, and I'll tell you why. I think that teams that have a scouting department that is truly about player evaluation, like understanding. I mean, I hate to talk about the Patriots, but we're going to have to. And it's because that scouting department, is entrenched in everything the coaches are trying to do. Belichick has built a machine. We're looking for X, Y, and Z. Find it, because we need to fill these roles for what we do. So they have this treadmill that's running smoothly, and they can evaluate talent. Other teams are data collectors, right? They're getting in all the data. This guy does this guy does that. You know, talent kind of accumulators. And I think it's going to be hard with the restrictions of movement and stuff. You're going to have to be a team that really can watch tape. I mean, really can see these guys on the field. And we're going to be able to see after this draft what team did well and how they evaluate talent. And I'm really fascinated by that. We won't see this kind of come to fruition until after the season or maybe years after. But this is interesting because we've never seen it before.
It's such a good point that, it will take, a while, I guess, in terms of revisionism to look back and see how successful they were. But I want to drill down a bit more on that because you make some really, really fascinating points. So firstly, the Patriots, right? So you're right. They have this, particularly, with this dynasty that has been created. So for 20 odd years, they have this quite clear construct where, and it's not just rookies, right? It's not just in the draft. You can look at journeyman pros that they've brought in, undrafted free agents that have bounced around practice squads, get wheeled in and make a name for themselves, or at least succeed at a higher level at the Patriots. Is it clearly Belichick has such a fundamental blueprint and ensures that everybody understands that and their role, but that is the MO of any team, right? Any head coach, any offensive defensive coordinator is attempting to do the same thing. So what is it about Belichick that makes it's so effective? How is it purely down to his ability to communicate that and what he wants and ensuring that his coaching staff are able to all share the same vision and communicate that as well? Is it down to the fact that he can pick a player that no one else would because he can see things in that player that no one else can see in relation to what he's trying to do? What is it about the Patriots, J-Bell, that take something that we all talk about and all understand conceptually and think, well, everybody should do that, right? But they can't do it. So why do they manage to?
I think you said, the first thing you said is key is communicator and his ability to communicate. I was reading a book recently and it talked about how Belichick's, both his parents were teachers. Now we know his father is an unbelievable scout. That's where he honed his ability to really watch tape and understand players. But his mom was a great teacher. So it's his ability. He has two things. He's a great communicator. I don't think everybody in that organization understands what they're supposed to do. He's clear. He's concise. They get it. Then they can go out and work. People want to work. People want to achieve. But it's what is my direction? And I hate to go to, turn left here, but that's the problem with a couple of countries, right? It's right. Like, what am I supposed to do?
What's the game plan? Yeah.
I want it. Come on, let's go. But, this is his skill set, right? It's like, I want you to do this. It's clear and concise. That being said, he can deliver that message because of his ability to really understand the game by the grunt work. And the grunt work is film. Understanding the game, studying. And when you know the agenda, you know the material, you got it down better than anybody, and you can clearly describe that. That's how your organization is always tied in. And because he is a scout by at heart, I mean, he's a guy who wants to evaluate players and chop up tape. It's very easy for him to have that flow downhill and the whole organization understand that. So when they have to move fast, everybody understands what the need is and how to find it. And I think what you were saying before is you would think other teams have that, but they don't. Other teams are not always about really evaluating player and player talent. It's like, it's kind of laziness. And OC always says this, and he's right. He's like, there's so much laziness in coaching and in the league. And it comes, this is my scheme. This is my, why can't they do this? This guy's a bum. He sucks. He this. Because you know what? That's lazy. That's easy. Of course you can say that. It's not your fault. Instead, Belichick is like, don't tell me what he can't do. Tell me what he can do. And we will make it so to when this player is on the field, we're doing what he can do. And I just think that's their strength. And people talk about it and they want to do it, but if that's not your culture and philosophy, it's too hard to turn that on. It's shifting towards that. And I like what Baltimore has done, you know, especially with Lamar Jackson and how they've just changed and evolved as an offense. And that's kind of what their belief system was when they realized they got this kid that's just different than anybody. So let's build it around his strengths. So you're going to see people in this draft. They're really going to have to know what the talent is. So when they get them on the field with less time, remember that they're going to have to do what these kids do well. DK Metcalf, perfect example. He had a great year. Why did he have a great year for the Seattle Seahawks? Because they did everything he's good at. They didn't do any. He ran every route he was great at in college. That's it. And that's what they use it for. And guess what? They had a great rookie year.
And it worked. It's so many good points you make, Jay Bell. On the patronage and looking at Steve Belichick, his dad, Bill Belichick's dad, there's great, the Halberstam book is great about that and looks at both of them. And one of the things that is really apparent there is from a young age, Bill Belichick was watching film from a young age and has never stopped that. And you read interviews, you hear interviews with people that have worked with him, other coaches, players, assistants, anybody in the organization, they say that is the one thing he does more than anything else is study tape, study film. He knows what he's doing. The interesting thing, I guess, outside of the draft and the points you make about that and front office and evaluation, the offseason is inevitably going to be wildly different to anything we've seen before. And, I mean, let's assume that September, the season starts on time, right?
Okay, all right.
But the season to start on time, when do we have to see organized practice, organized training in person? I'm not talking about this virtual using Zoom and going through playbooks and everything else, which is going to have to happen over the next couple of months, right? But when can teams realistically report to some kind of training for the season to start on time, do you think?
I think we got to look at this like old school football, man. Like, I mean, I don't even know what date, maybe the 80s, you know, and before, where right. It was all about, like, you literally showed up to training camp. You had one mini camp and it was training camp. And that's why if anybody wants to know the history of football and realize why our collective bargaining agreement has changed toward the work hours, it's because back in the day, you came to training camp to get in shape. You had a full-time job, you know, before that. So I think it's going to have to come down to they need training camp. So, you know, late July, come in and training camp is how we get ready for the season. I think the way, and you will see the teams that have players that have off-season preparation motivation, meaning guys that just keep themselves in shape, you know, a lot of vets that know how to take care of themselves because they're not going to be around the facility.
Yeah, that's a huge point, isn't it? Because, and again, it's the perception we have that every player is a multimillionaire and has got, you know, a home gym, you know, the size of a kind of typical public gym at home. Right. But that isn't the case. There's a lot of players on the fringes at the kind of lower end of the pay scale. And again, those ones we mentioned earlier that are maybe for the last couple of years have bounced around bigger rosters and get cut. And, you know, even coming close to home, you look at the story of someone like Efe, who, mm-hmm. you know, for a number of years, as he was learning his trade, was that kind of player. You know, before he landed the starting jobs and the contracts and everything else, he was kind of bouncing around the fringes of the NFL. There are hundreds and hundreds of players like that. So what are they going to do? I mean, it's going to really, I guess, protect the most successful, providing their attitudes there and affect, again, much like bringing us back to society, right? It's going to affect those at the lower end of things, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be hard for young guys to make the team this year. A guy like me probably wouldn't have made it in the NFL in this climate. I needed the pro days because I was hurt during the combine. Yeah. I needed every mini camp, every practice. I literally made the team because of the offseason workouts. The Dallas Cowboys, I went back to UCLA to graduate, and the Pac-12 has a rule where if you're, you get to go back to school, everybody has to go back for guys like, you know, that are right there on the cusp to graduate. Mm. So I went back, came back, and they were going to cut me when I came back. And they told me, I think, the end of that year, the reason they kept me is because in the workouts, I was beating people in the sprints, and they thought, man, this guy's been gone for X amount of time, and if he comes back and runs like this, this guy's a self-motivator.
Right.
So that's literally how I got in the league.
Yeah.
And I think guys like me might not have that opportunity this year, but, you know, it's just what it is. I feel sorry. I mean, OC is same thing. He didn't get the wave on him until his personal workout at the school. So those kind of things are going to happen. You're going to miss out on talent.
Yeah.
But that being said, the players that are in the league, what they're going to have to do is, you know, everybody, because they got their own trainers and because of technology, you get your workouts sent to you. You have a field. You go do your workouts. But the league, and I'm fascinated if the longer this takes, is going to be made up with a bunch of people that know how to prepare. Mm. You know, you will miss out on young people on the fringe, but the guys that play, the guys that are on the field, are going to be proven players, proven commodities. Mm. Because as a young person, the first thing, the hardest thing to do is, man, how do I prepare? How do I work? It usually takes you 6 months to figure that out.
Sure.
Don't have that luxury, right?
And the vets
unless
around
you're a
you.
Draft pick.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let's fast forward that. So you were talking about you from a rookie perspective, and fast forward that a couple of years, and you're established in the league, and you're going through this. So how does that change? So, you know, you've got your, you know, if your head's screwed on, which in, you know, your case it was, you know, you got to look after yourself and take care of that side of it. But equally, let's say you have moved to a new team during all of this, right? You sign up for a new team. So you are going through what is going to be a prolonged off season without any practice of any kind in the flesh. So you're doing everything virtually. You're learning the playbooks virtually. You're building a rapport with your teammates, with your coach, your positional coach, all done through the way we're talking now, through Zoom, through virtual. So from a player's point of view, J-Bell, how much of a challenge do you think that's going to be?
You know, I think if you are a guy like I was, it'll work because for me, training at home, I had I knew what I needed to do. It was balancing that with what the team training needed to be that messed me up because I couldn't do all I wanted to do. Right. I had to do the team workouts, right? And that means I can't do as many workouts as I want to do. So from a workout perspective, it would actually help me because now it's really tailored towards me. I mean, right. I'm working, doing my own thing every single day, which is great as an individual. I think with now, everything these guys have is on their iPad. So as a self-motivator, as a self-starter, digging into that is the key. And I almost think that even in the offseason, sometimes coaches are busy doing their thing. It's not a lot of time they have to bring you in and break down film with you, especially if you're not the guy. But I think now if you had questions and you can do what, you know, we're doing now and I'm like, I'm watching tape with a coach. That right there, one-on-one. Hey, the coach says, I'm going to give my DBs 30 minutes a day, you know, my guys or whatever. I mean, I could get a lot done with that one-on-one. And I think the being forced to do that, especially the young guys, because they don't know the system or a guy new to the team, like you just said, that one-on-one attention is going to help some people. Mm. It really is. This is a different opportunity. And I think that someone who understands themselves and asks the right questions could get a lot out of this, because coaches have to think differently and have to, like I said, they can't talk to the team as a whole. They got to talk to you as individuals. So I think that they can help. It can help. I'm very interested in how this pans out. I mean, it's just hopefully it only happens once, right?
Right.
So the knowledge we get out of this is going to be amazing.
I think on the, even on the, you know, you, and you, I'm sure will have considered this given the fact you played corner, but I guess receivers and quarterbacks, that's maybe the most fascinating element in terms of cohesion and simpatico, right? And you look at, and I automatically think of Brady, given how much he demands and what he wants from his receivers, but that's kind of offset with the fact he's going to be playing with the receivers he's going to be playing with in Tampa. Like, I think he'll be okay. Yeah. Or you look at Rivers, right, in a new situation, you think, well, he is one of the greats of his generation. If there's anybody that's going to be able to adjust quickly to building up rapport with his receivers, it's going to be someone like Rivers. So I guess it's the, certainly the rookie quarterbacks coming in, into the league for all kinds of reasons, but particularly that. And I'm just trying to think any other quarterback situation. Like, again, like the Titans re-up Tannehill. So there's cohesion there, the Cowboys with Dak. So there are going to be very few situations, I guess, where, a quarterback and needing to get on the same page with his receivers is going to be particularly affected. Let's talk about the draft and specifically the quarterback situation and the news coming out about Tua in the last couple of days, which is terrific to see, first things first. And I wonder whether you think it's going to impact where Tua goes in the draft. So for listeners that haven't seen it, Tua, of course, you had the big injury that knocked him out last season. And as a result, his draft stock fell. And on all the mock draft boards ever since, he's been, he fell right down at one point, but he's been up around, hovering around the number five mark for the last couple of months anyway. But reports coming out now that he is back to normal, that the language and the narrative around him, J-Bell, is that it's like he hasn't ever been out. Now, I know it's different based on, the fact that we haven't seen him in a game, and that's a kind of fundamental or anything remotely resembling a game, obviously, for reasons we've just been talking about. But the general consensus is Tua is fine. The injury hasn't affected him in the way that people thought it might. So do you think he might go higher than five? Do you think this buzz and this news about it means that his stock could rise back even more again?
There's a possibility. You know, I think you got to be careful where the narrative is coming from, right? It's his people pushing it out there. Sure. Great agents. That's what they're supposed to do.
Sure.
But, you know, these teams, they want to pull and poke you, you know, that's what they want to do. They want their doctors to look at you. This is a huge investment, right? Regardless, he's going to be the number two quarterback. I think Herbert has pushed himself up there out of Oregon and Jordan Love, obviously.
Those guys getting a lot of buzz, huh?
Yeah, those guys will all go the first round. And I one thing about the draft is, and there's a lot of experts and a lot of information. I've been through a lot of them. They all surprise me. I'm always like, whoa, wow. You know, so
sure.
I look at the talent and you usually know the needs and the teams that want quarterbacks, and it's easy to follow. But yeah, I mean, the one thing about it is, you know, he's had a lot of injuries. So it's just, where is he at? But everybody listening needs to understand. All that being said, it's so hard to get a quarterback. Everybody's chasing, right? So the risk, reward, and then gamble, it just makes sense for teams. They have to do it. That's what the NFL is now. So he's going to get drafted high regardless because of that. Because if he works out and he is healthy, he should be a very, very high level quarterback for the way he plays the game, especially what the NFL is now. Where you want a bunch of playmakers out there and a distributor. And we know that quarterbacks that are distributors, Drew Brees, Tom Brady has been one at times. They do well. They have success. And, he's that kind of guy, quick release, great kind of anticipation. And he's left-handed. Don't forget left-handed quarterbacks. We don't see them all the time. We don't get to practice them all the time. So there is a small advantage there also.
So do you, I mean, I guess in a way that the top five picks have gone, you know, the Giants don't need a quarterback, or that they've invested too much in Daniel Jones and it's too early in that situation at the moment. The Skins, I guess, as well with Haskins, I guess there's more of a question mark there at the moment.
Yeah.
Your season, but nevertheless, it's still A lot of money they've spent early doors on that one. The Lions, I guess, sitting at three are interesting given where Stafford's at.
They better get that corner. They better get that corner out of Ohio State.
Oh, Okuda, yeah, yeah.
They better get a corner. I mean, they want to play man-to-man bump and run. They want a guy that can go out there and play bump and run. I mean, that's what Patricia does. That yeah. is a need right there. That's one of those that just pops out to me like, man, go get it. Go get that yeah. corner. You lose Slay. I mean, that's a need right there.
Those two things have to be connected, right? The fact that Slay goes means shows their hand, right? That's surely where they're going to go.
Listen, who knows with trades and all that and gaining value, things can happen. But when I just look at immediate need and something that you need a guy that can come in and that's polished at corner. You know, some of these rookie corners have all the skills in the world, but their polished technique or their football IQ isn't there yet. It could be there in a half a season. Who knows? But this guy seems to have a great understanding of the game and all the skills.
Does he strike you? And again, to your point a few minutes ago, Jebel, it's so difficult to know, even with supposed sure things, until we're 3-4 years into their career. But does he strike you as a player that is going to follow a kind of Revis level trajectory of being, you know, lights out top? In the same way, if we were talking about a quarterback and saying Andrew Luck, we just knew that he was going to be an elite level quarterback from pretty much the beginning. Does Okuda strike you as a corner that, if things go to plan, he is going to be one of those type of players?
Yes. Right now, it does. I just watch his game. He's very smooth. He has a great sense of awareness. And I mean that in a way where even man and zone coverage, he understands how he is supposed to play. And that's just that's what you want. Because if you got a man-to-man guy and you need to put him in, that's a skill, but he needs to play his zone coverage and understand how that is to help the defense as a whole. Some guys, it's hard to switch in and out of that. I mean, Stephon Gilmore struggled when he first got to the Patriots because he needed to understand how they were trying to play their zone coverages. It wasn't because it's man-to-man. It was the way the zones were and how his role changed. And he got a grasp of that. Actually, they molded around him more. And, you know, he had the year he had. But this guy coming in as a rookie, he's got a great football IQ at the corner position. And that's just an advantage. Now, if he goes out there and he's toasty roasty, as I like to say, and he's just out there, you know, and the speed of the game is getting him. I can't say anything about that now, but everything I've seen on tape, this kid can go out there and do it.
So if we follow that to plan, then again, and you said, as you rightly say, there's going to, almost certainly there are going to be twists in the tail and deals that get done and dealing and dealing. But if Tua does fall to the Dolphins at five, given everything that given his ceiling, right? And if it goes to plan, that is going to be, they have to take him, right? I mean, that's going to be one of the, if he is fit and he plays through his potential, that is going to be one of the steals of the last 10 years in the draft, right? A quarterback like that falls to five because people are worried about his injury and because of what's happened with coronavirus. As you say, you can't kick the tires and just check. So his people are spinning. I'm 100% says Tua, as people say that, but it's too much of a gamble. Or do you think should teams ahead or below and deal up make that play and make that gamble because the upside is just so big?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, you know, they got a lot of options, man. Herbert has been making some waves, some splash, you know. Yeah. So it's as you know, you've been following the game a long time. I mean, teams just have different perspectives on these players. Like, you just like, really? That, yeah. You know, okay. So, yes, I do think he'd be a great fit in Miami. I think he'd be being in Florida, you know, coming out of Alabama. Great fan base, right? Everybody. The state of Alabama will be watching the Miami Dolphins. These are things you need to think about. You want great to sell point. Jerseys. You great want point. To sell jerseys. So I do think it's a great move, and I think they give him time. And the reason I say that is because that organization from the owner down has said, we got time. The things they did last year, how they stripped that team down to get all these picks, all this cap room. Because guess what? Everybody knew they had time. And so everybody started to make the decisions based upon the future. That's what this team is built on. This team is built on, we're going to do this right. And you have time. People have job security. So when a coaching staff has job security, they are more accepting taking a guy and sitting him and resting him and getting him ready. Because you know what? They'll be there the next year.
It's a great point. The Raiders have that, of course, as well. And they're not set at quarterback position, but
they're not.
But they're only sitting 12, so they'd have to wheel and deal up, I think, to look at one of those two players. You mentioned the Dolphins. They've got the biggest number of draft picks, of course, the most draft picks. And they've also been quite prolific so far in free agency. I like what they've done, to be honest. I like the Jordan Howard pickup. I think Byron Jones as well. I think that makes sense. So the Dolphins for me, the Bills as well, I like the business that they've done. What about you, J-Bow? Who do you like, based on the business done so far, who do you think has performed well in terms of free agency?
Well, first of all, before I answer that, I watched Miami, right? Because I'm keeping an eye on him. So I'm like, let me check out Byron Jones. This is crazy, just that you mentioned that. Last night, I watched tape on Byron Jones.
Okay.
Cool. I'm just in the lab.
We did prepare.
I'm just looking at his technique, just play after play, footwork. And I'm like, man, this guy can play some bump and run coverage. I've heard everybody say it. I've watched the games, but I really got into his technique as a corner, footwork. And I was like, he's so polished at bump and run man-to-man coverage. And that fit exactly what they want to do. That's exactly how they want to play on defense with at least their top guy. Mm. I mean, this is what the Patriots do. I mean, this is, you got to have a guy like that. And not only is it the way he's going to play, but if you're trying to teach the rest of your team how to be technically sound, when your guy you just paid has that kind of technique, really, really helps. So that was fascinating when I dug into that.
But I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad, as a Dolphins fan, as you know, I'm glad to hear he's got the J-Bell seal of approval there. That is good. That is a big
step. I mean, people talk about his game and all that kind of stuff. Look, you get paid because you're the guy, right? You get paid because you're the guy. That's up, you know, the money's there. But I do like his technique. He was very polished and bump and run man to man. And that's what you brought him there for. I mean, that's the reason he's there. So, I like that. I also, you know, I really, when I look at it, I mean, listen, Carolina getting Teddy Bridgewater is a big move to me. Really. Really big move. And
You're not convinced. I thought there was going to be a big butt there.
No. And this is why I like it. So you got to, obviously we've talked about it. You know, I'm into finance. I love finance. So of course I know Tepper, right? The owner. Yeah. And everybody in Wall Street talks about this dude and his approach to business, right? It's no question his intellect and how he looks at businesses. All right, cool. Let's see how this translates to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't change anything when he first got the team. He just watched, right? Like a good manager, just figured it out. And then he put his imprint on it. And the one thing he understood, especially coming out of the Steelers, knowing what he knew from being a Steelers owner, culture, right? And I can't wait to see where Cam Newton goes. I'm excited. Mm. But Cam Newton was the culture of that team. So if you want to change the culture, you want to implement your own culture, you got to change some things.
Right.
If you know anything about Teddy Bridgewater, and when he was in Minnesota, obviously I had friends there. Mm-hmm. Everywhere he's been, they love him.
Mm.
People play for Teddy. This guy commands respect in a way where he's your guy.
Mm.
This is just who he is. You bring him in now, and he can run that offense the way they want it ran. But this is a culture change. This is a shift. This is, we're putting our fingerprint on what we are going forward. Mm. He's the best quarterback for that. Not only as a player, but as a person.
That is great.
I like that move.
Great insight. Because I looked at it, and it's a really great point you make, that he's such a fundamentally different type of demeanor and character to Cam. And that's not a knock on Cam. I like Cam.
No.
I think he actually gets unfair criticism. We were chatting with I think it was Ross Tucker was on the show last week, and I read one piece really slagging off Cam and talking about that now infamous post Super Bowl press conference he gave. And you know, I get it. Like, you've just lost the Super Bowl, you know? I mean, and he wasn't, yeah. I didn't think his answers were particularly obtuse or, you know, difficult. I think he was frustrated, and yeah, maybe as the quarterback, as the face of the team, you should put on a brave face and maybe be a bit, but I didn't have an issue with him at all for being like that. So I've always liked Cam, and I think he gets an unfair knock, but at the same time, I appreciate that, you know, that as you say, Teddy's a very different kind of player. So just on that, based on guys that you know Teddy and the info on intel on him, is he like a kind of Julio Jones, no frills, just gets on with it, no nonsense kind of player? Is that the difference? Whereas with Cam, love him or hate him, there's a bit of a circus around him, isn't there?
Yeah, two different kind of guys, and they both have. Listen, you always want what you don't have, right? You always want a change in scenery,
right?
And before, this is not a Cam bashing thing because I love Cam Newton, and I think I think he's gonna ball this year wherever he goes.
Where's he gonna go? Where's he gonna go?
Oh man, dude, if he went to New England, I would lose my mind. Belichick just getting him in there, saying, "Look, Cam, we're gonna do this. Follow me. We're gonna roll like this." I mean, he's undefeated against the Patriots.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway. So
that's a good point. Belichick, yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. If Cam can just stay healthy. He's only 30, right? I mean, he's in his prime.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and the league is built for a guy like him. That being said, and before we get into what they say about Teddy, Christian McCaffrey, who I love as a player, love his demeanor. I was listening to him in an interview, and he talked about how much Cam made the game fun again for him. He was so appreciative that he's so serious, right? He's trying to be great. And he was like, man, Cam made me love it again. Like I was a kid. And he talked about that so much. Like he, that really helped him. And we see the year he had. So remember, this is,
Yeah.
This guy, Cam's good for a locker room too.
Hey, on McCaffrey and what you were saying about Tepper, will Tepper pay McCaffrey?
You gotta pay McCaffrey. You know, I think that, I think they're going to have to end up drafting another running back though, like a bruiser. You need somebody that can take the load because listen,
crazy
McCaffrey's
amount of snaps.
Yeah, McCaffrey, put him in a slot. He's better than 90% of the receivers that play in the slot.
Yeah.
So, and dude, he sells jerseys. He's good for your organization. There's a lot of things you need to think about when it's paying players, man. It's like, what do they do?
Yes.
They put people in these seats. That's important. I mean, that's the game, you know? And so, I think he should. I think he should he knows what the trainers are telling him and how McCaffrey's body is going and all that kind of stuff. McCaffrey seems to take care of himself.
On Tepper, the reason I asked a question about McCaffrey is because they're going to have to pay him big, right? They might have to make him the best paid player in that position. And you make a point about the amount of wear and tear he's already had. Is there a chance that Tepper will look at this analytically in that respect and think, you know, much like we see bad deals done in Major League Baseball where, you know, big sluggers get a payday and they are on the decline kind of from there on in, or pretty much a season or two into it, and the deal over the long term doesn't make sense. Is there any way that Tepper might think, I'm not sure, he's an amazing player now, he's one of the best in the business now, but a long-term deal with the big bucks doesn't necessarily make economic sense?
Well, you have to evaluate the player. That's the problem. Everybody's different. And I saw this with guys like Terrell Owens when he played. I mean, some guys just take care of their body differently. And, you know, Tom Brady, look at what he's done. You have the information, especially when you drafted a guy and he's been in your organization for a long time. You know who takes care of himself. Yeah. You know, so that has to go into the equation. And obviously, Tepper can input that better than anybody. And the market, you know, somebody's going to pay McCaffrey because he's great. So as long as he's on an upward trajectory where he's able to do what he does well, you know, he'll be fine. I do think as an organization, and the Panthers have done this better than anybody, they've always drafted another running back high when they had a guy. Mm. I mean, my buddy Deshaun Foster got drafted there when they had what's the name at running back? I forget his name. He had come out of Washington, though. He was the main guy. But, you know, they've always had two guys, you know. So that's what they do. So I think they do the same thing. Get a bruiser, take the volume off of him, but you need McCaffrey. He is a playmaker. In today's NFL, it's almost positionless when you talk about playmakers on offense. Get him the ball.
I am going to dive into the mailbag, J-Bow, because they knew you were coming. When you were on the show, the mailbag is bursting at the seams. So we've got some.
I'll answer quickly.
speed, darling. Okay, so this is from Dean Ficini. Hey, Dean, he says, what do you I'm looking forward to your answer on this one. What do you make of Bill O'Brien's handling of the DeAndre Hopkins trade? Surely O'Brien has put himself under a huge amount of pressure already. He is getting, J-Bell, universally vilified for the deal. Are you amongst the haters? Is there any way you could put a case forward that they made the right move there, the Texans?
It's very hard to be a head coach and a GM. It's right. How much time do you have in the day, right? And I do think there's this level of people know that. And it has nothing to do with his personal intelligence. It's like, how many things can you ask yourself? How many things can you handle in a day, high level like that? So I do think there's a problem with that. He's trying to do what Belichick has done, and Belichick has a different infrastructure and system, like we talked about earlier. So I don't like. There was other things going on with DeAndre Hopkins and why this happened, but yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of it. But I'm sympathetic and empathetic that this guy is doing a lot. Maybe if he did one or the other, he's a great coach. Like, we're forgetting that. He is a great coach. General manager, I'm not sure.
It's a tough gig, isn't it? Because particularly you mentioned the Belichick mindset that he developed under and understand he wants to run things that way. Here's one for Mark Jones at the NC Show, incidentally, if you want to get in touch with us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. A player we haven't mentioned yet, J-Bell, can Jameis bounce back from 2019 and what's happened to him? Or will the mental scars be too much for a potential team to have to overcome? So I guess Mark's talking about the double whammy of being shifted aside for the greatest quarterback of all time, but also his wild season. And he was compelling to watch, wasn't he? But his issues with turning the ball over are going to give teams the jitters, isn't it, in terms of whether he lands another starting gig straight away?
Right. It's going to be hard to land a starting job straight away, but can he recover as a player? Without a doubt. This dude has no fear. That's what his skill set sure. is. You know, sure. he's not scared to sling the ball around the yard. So I'm not worried about him, but he has to hone it in. He has to be in a system that does that. He'll be somewhere, and hopefully he gets somewhere where they work on him as a project, because this is not the last we've seen of Jameis Winston. No chance at all.
So that'll go down as individually one of the most remarkable seasons, I think, in the history of the game. You didn't know whether he was going to throw a touchdown or an interception on virtually every snap that he had. I mean, it really was getting to that stage of jeopardy. It was remarkable. A couple more for you before we get out of Dodge, J-Bell. So here's a good one from John Ryan. Thanks for this, John. Can you ask J-Bell what he thought of the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, and is it too long, in brackets 10 years? Players coming into the NFL are pretty much going to be bound to this for their careers. And also he says no side clause for any possible London franchise. And he also adds the hashtag where's OC, which quite a lot of our listeners do. But let's look at the CBA in the kind of key points from it. I mean, I guess from a rookie's point of view, one of the things that stood out for me was the flexibility now and the leverage that rookies have if they are outplaying their rookie contracts before they get to the end of it. I mean, that was just so wildly unfair, wasn't it? Where you saw players at an absolutely elite level being paid, relatively speaking, peanuts for what they were delivering.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that help the players on the low end of the roster. So that's cool. There's a lot of things that help retired players like myself, which is cool. So when you think about that, and the question is really good, right? I mean, these players coming in and the sacrifice they have to make, but when they're going to want the same players to make the sacrifice when they're retired. So it's this, that's when you need to think of the brotherhood of the NFL. And, but 10 years is the one thing, I'm glad he mentioned this actually. Very good question. Mm. That was the one thing I was hesitant about. I was like, man, that's a long time. There's no option because, you know, when the previous CBA before the last, when the NFL owners had the option, they opted out of that quick. I mean, so it's, I did not like the time, but I am always aware of what I don't know. And my opinion is based on what I know, and I was not privy to a lot of the information they had when they made this decision. So I'm well aware of that, but I did have a problem with the length of time.
Fair play. One more for you. From maybe the best Twitter handle I've seen in a while, Abyssinia Later. You see what he did there? Ooh. Abyssinia Later.
Oh, by the way, OC's at home on his exercise machines. This guy, when quarantine's going down, he literally ordered a home gym of exercise machines.
And he literally
was like, how fast can you get it to me? He's got it all now.
Has he got a Peloton? Does OC have a Peloton?
He does not, but he has a Versa climber and he has a treadmill. So he's go time. He's go time.
I'm not surprised, man. I'm not surprised.
No, he was not messing around. Not
within
at all.
Seconds, bam, the phone seconds. Goes.
Yes.
Abyssinia Later asks, and I love this question. It's a good one to end on. Are Buffalo overhyped by default? So the deals that Buffalo have done, Diggs obviously most notably, and then as Abyssinia Later points out, Brady leaving. And he goes on to ask, until Allen proves he's more than a flashy but mediocre quarterback with a great run game, hard, but maybe fair, none of the other pieces really matter as a whole. Agree or disagree? So what do you make of, I guess, the deals that Buffalo have done? Everybody is hyping them. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. And whether you think they've done enough to, look, they're a playoff team last season. Have they done enough to progress going forward?
I disagree with, I know that Twitter handle was great, but I disagree with the comment. And it's because, listen, man, this is their opportunity, right? Finally a shakeup in the East, in the AFC East. Josh Allen is exactly what they want. They built the offense around him. Stephon Diggs is a route runner that can take the top off of defense, but they still already have Josh Brown, right? Explosive receiver. So I like the moves they've made. And he's going to get better. I mean, quarterbacks only get better year in and year out.
Right.
And I wasn't a huge McDermott fan, but as the years progressed, I am. This dude has got them believing into his culture, his philosophy. I mean, when they brought back, what's crazy is they bring Josh Norman in, who to me didn't play well, right? Mm. But this guy coached him and is like, I know how to make him play well.
Right.
Right? So you see these kind of things happening. You know, I like Vernon Butler coming in for him. You know, I like what they're doing because I believe this coach has a formula and the team is believing in it. They are on the cusp to greatness. Their quarterback will get better every year and their philosophy as a team, it just makes sense.
Do you know why, J-Bell? You are one of the very best in the business. Do you know why? Well, there are many reasons why.
But I think just because we're friends, to be honest, but you can say whatever you want to say. It works for me.
You have brought us full circle so fluently there. We started this show pretty much talking about the Belichick blueprint and the way and how they've managed to achieve success. And you end it saying McDermott has the same kind of moxie, the same kind of approach. It is a symmetrical, beautiful way of wrapping things up. It is always, always a pleasure catching up with you. Are you keeping all right with the lockdown? So if Oshie's going all Rocky IV on us, Ivan Drago
yeah.
on us,
he's not messing around.
What are you doing?
I got a bike, the assault bike, the arms and legs, you know, like the fighters.
I think I'm a fighter.
So I'm just doing all the home workouts, a lot of yoga. I think spending a lot of time honing my skills and all my different businesses and really my focus on my body, you know, just really trying to feel better because all the injuries and stuff. So got time to really lock into that. So everybody just needs to use their time wisely because more than money, man, time is a valuable resource, more than anything.
Amen to that. Jay Bell, absolute pleasure catching up with you. Of course, you and Osi, you're rolling your pod. I've noticed rolling that one out. So we'll plug that as well. The Jason and Osi Show, which is available on all good podcatchers. Getting any writing done? Because if you do, so I've got a lot of writing, of course, in the last year. You got anything cooking on that front?
I mean, you know, I got some things in the kitchen. So nice. I'm just working. It'll be some surprises pop out at you. You'll be the first to know.
I don't doubt it. Hey,
tell everybody to follow me on social media. My people said I need to get my followers up. Jason Ooh. Bell, 33, on Instagram and Twitter.
We are going to drive. We'll drive that. We'll get the weight of the NC Show behind that as well. Consider that.
Yeah,
done.
You got juice, man.
Jay Bell, saluting you, man. Great to catch up. Look after yourself, and we'll see you soon, yeah?
All right, buddy. Thanks.
You heard the man. Follow Jay Bell on Twitter at JasonBell33. Instagram as well. Let's boost his social following, gang. Hey, and if you're in that charitable mood, get behind our profile on iTunes or whichever podcast you listen to as well. If you haven't already, after a season plus of The Nat Coombs Show on ESPN, leave a review. Give us a bit of a big up because it helps us with our sponsors and the network, of course, and everybody else. So if you have time right now to do that, we would massively appreciate it. And most importantly of all, well, it puts a smile on Harry's face. No punter news. I realized we should have dropped some punter news. That was a special request from Harry for all your old school Americanage fans out there. Maybe we'll squeeze that in over the coming weeks. Speaking of which, we're back next week with two more episodes, including Marek Larwood, the comedian and Detroit Lions fan, dropping by. So really looking forward to that. Until then, stay safe, keep well, and we'll catch up soon. Bye for now.